D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Trevor Maddich will join us in roughly 20 minutes. We also have a pair of tickets to the Music City Bowl to give away. We will be doing so immediately following Trevor Maddich. So if you want Music City Bowl tickets, we have a pair of them. We're giving away a pair every day. If you want a pair of Music City Bowl tickets, be listening this hour immediately following our interview with Trevor Maddich. I will give out the cue to call, which comes with a trivia question this time because I like a good brain teaser. But let's continue our conversation about what we were talking about. Is a Titans turnaround as simple as hiring the right coach? But of course, that has evolved, or maybe devolved, into a conversation about Cam Ward. And Derek, I know that you have a lot to get off your chest.
No, it's because I want to, you know, people to understand. I get people wanting to see the numbers. I understand that, because what's the easiest way to convince somebody is to show them the numbers. And if the numbers are, you know, satisfactory, then everybody feels pretty good. If Cam's numbers are a little bit better, even if they're not winning, I think people are feeling good about, you know, the situation that they're in. But in this situation, at the beginning of the season, even once they drafted Cam and right before the season started, it was this. Everybody was wondering, are they going to be patient with the quarterback? Are they going to be patient with the head coach too? We saw they were not patient with the head coach. They got rid of him very quickly. But are they going to be patient with the quarterback? Are they going to be able to develop the quarterback? They need to be patient. They need to get the right person in here. Has the right person been in here? No. They fired him. They fired who they thought was the right person. Now they're dealing with a guy that is basically a lame duck. He's not going to be here next year. So you have all this stuff working against Cam. And Cam, again, he needs to play better. But you're asking a rookie quarterback to overcome something that I've seen veteran quarterbacks not be able to overcome. Talent and the coaching staff.
And a very tough schedule, too.
And a tough schedule. And I'm
particularly with the defenses they're playing.
And I'm not saying that, listen, Bones is an excellent coach. And there are some other coaches on that coaching staff that are really good coaches. But we know this staff ain't going to be the staff that goes into next season. We know that. At least not all of them. There may be a few that do retain their jobs with the next coaching staff. But we look at all of this stuff, and we're pointing at all these things that are wrong, but then we don't want to give – and we don't want to be patient. Not to say that you can't critique Cam, but it's like, oh, he can't make it. He's a bust. He's a bum. They made a mistake. After 14 games, y'all were asking everybody to be patient with Will Levis into his second year. And now y'all ready to throw Cam out after 15 games?
It's hard when you're watching
that
week after
just,
week.
And I know he was the number one pick. Right. I know he was the number one pick in the draft. I get that part.
Expectations are higher from the start. I think we have to also keep in mind, your central question was what? Adam, go back to Mike Herndon's tweet.
I've got to find it. Now
the template.
Okay.
What is the template?
I will paraphrase.
Chicago.
Denver, Chicago, New England. They hired the right coach, and you can turn it around quick.
Yes.
But let's keep in mind, Chicago got it wrong several times with Justin Fields, with the different coaches, with Mitch Trubisky. They had a lot of struggles before they have it right for now this year, even though they have been fortunate with their schedule, with how things have fallen. They have not been a dominant team, but it looks good right now. Go ahead.
Here's the post from Mike Herndon of PaulGaharski.com, whose work I greatly admire. Quote, the Broncos, Bears, and Patriots seasons should be pretty inspirational for Titans fans. Those teams were where the Titans are now very recently. They went out and hired good coaches and have turned things around very quickly. It doesn't have to be a 4 to 5 year thing.
But it realistically, it has been for the Broncos, who had not made the playoffs from the time they won the Super Bowl 10 years ago. They beat Cam Newton. Remember that team? Great defense. Vaughn Miller, those guys. The very, very end of Peyton Manning.
Mm-hmm.
they didn't make the playoffs until last year. So they had a lot of trials and tribulations.
They missed the playoffs every year from 2016 to 2023.
Eight straight years.
New England the same
New England got it wrong with Mac Jones before they're getting it right now with Drake May and Mike Vrabel. Does the coach have a lot to do with that? No doubt about it. The right coach is there. But I'm just illustrating how hard it is sometimes. It's not easy to say, just hire the right coach. Everything's going to be all right. Everything has to fall into place. You have to draft well. You have to have the right guy. So I don't know if it's as simple as he's pointing out there.
Let's play the clip again from Bo Nix. So Bo Nix has the Broncos at 12-2. He just had an outstanding game on Sunday for the Denver Broncos, if I am not mistaken, against the Green Bay Packers. Let me pull up his stat line. It was 34-26 Broncos over Packers. Bo Nix, 23 of 34 for 302 yards and 4 touchdowns. Most certainly the best game of Bo Nix's young career. But Bo Nix, I would say, is considered by many to be this sort of new age game manager. And game manager, again, I feel is a banned phrase or a dirty phrase for a lot of quarterbacks. They don't want to be referred to as a game manager.
It's a backhanded compliment.
Mm-hmm. Precisely. Here is what Bo Nix said last week.
It's become a negative thing. I don't know why, because the best quarterbacks of all time manage the game at a high level. I think the biggest difference is when the time comes down to it, they just find ways to make either an explosive or make another play. So, all the good ones, all the great ones that win, they manage the game at a high level. Now, some are just more flashy, and I think they don't have that, that context or that tag. But it really doesn't matter because, your job as a quarterback, execute the play that's called, get your team in the end zone, and at the end of the day, have more points than the other team and find a way to win. And that's what we're managing to do.
That was Bo Nix, and I like that answer. I think that was some good perspective from Bo Nix.
Because it's a honest, and I believe it's a truthful answer. If you've watched this league, first and foremost, you got to be able to manage a game. Guys don't make it in this league because they can't figure out how to manage a game, how to just get the easy completions, how to keep your team on a sustained drive. Reading the defense is just throwing it to the weak spot of the defense. That is managing the game. That's doing the things necessary to keep the ball going. That's a manager of the game. And then Bo Nix took it a little bit further. He said those elite guys, those great guys, those guys not only manage it well, but those guys make that play when that play needs to be made. So there's nothing wrong with being a game manager if you're winning games. Look at Jalen Hurts. There are a lot of people that don't consider Jalen Hurts an elite quarterback or a top five quarterback. But he's won a Super Bowl and he's been to 2 out of the last 3.
Correct.
And nobody complains about Jalen Hurts.
And a Super Bowl MVP?
And a Super Bowl MVP. So, to me, that's a guy that manages the game well. And those guys that they go out and get, the A.J. Browns, the Devontae Smiths, those guys do their job. When the ball come to me, I'm going to catch it and make a play. Just get me the ball. That's all receivers care about. Just get me. What did T.O. say? Give me the damn ball. I don't care who you are. Just get me the ball. That's all you got to do. That's all a quarterback needs to do. Get the guy the ball, methodically move the ball down the field. There were some drives where time wasn't great. He just managed the ball. 5 yards here, 3 yards here, 10 yards here, 5 yards here, 8 yards here. And you turn around and you look at it, and he's at the 5-yard line. And he didn't do anything spectacular. He managed the game. The difference is Tom won Super Bowls too, so he's the GOAT. Cam's not there yet. Bo Nix is not there yet. But what Bo Nix said is true.
One thing I am wondering about, we'll put Bo Nix in this category for the moment. As you said, Derek, there are people who consider Jalen Hurts nothing more than a game manager who has been the beneficiary of an outstanding team around him. But you guys tell me, what are those quarterbacks' superpowers. I mean, Jalen Hurts can what? Squat like 750 pounds,
a million
right?
pounds, yes.
The tush push works because he is strong as hell. Mm-hmm. Bo Nix, I'm not exactly sure what his superpower is right now. He can get out on the run, right? Mm-hmm. What's Cam Ward's superpower? What can it be? Does he have it within him to find one? You can be a game manager, but as Nix alluded to there, maybe you have that little something extra that when the situation calls for it, you can rely on that superpower.
I'm going to tell you what his superpower is at this particular moment. Is improvising. Is extending a play. Giving his receivers enough time to get open for the third, you know, for a third time or whatever. Get open within the scheme of the route. And he allows those guys that when it's not open, they can break their route off and they can find a soft spot. That happens because Cam gives them enough time to do it. And we've seen it week in and week out where Cam sits back there, the rush is there, he gets outside the pocket, he buys time to allow his receivers to get open because obviously they didn't get open at the start of the play. So he has to buy time. That's the superpower that they can enhance. You know who else does that well? I'm not comparing him to him, but you know who else does that well?
Don't say it.
Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, you
said
it.
He does a great job at keeping it going.
You done did it now,
Derek. But Josh Allen does it. Jackson does it. Lamar Jackson does it. But they have more superpowers than just that. And I'm talking about those guys that I named are elite quarterbacks. Okay? Cam has the power of allowing the play to go on a little bit longer while his receivers try to get open. We've seen it week in and week out. Sometimes it's successful. Sometimes it's not, where you got to throw it out of bounds. Sometimes he misses it. Sometimes the receiver drops it. But that is his superpower at this point, extending a drive or extending a play, I mean.
One texter says, Brian, in your opinion, can the bad habits – we're seeing out of Cam Ward this season be coached out of him in the long run?
You hope they are. I'm not going to say that definitively you're going to be able to coach all of those things out of him. I think some of the most important things you're going to have to be able to coach. And it seems like...
And how much of it is up to the coach and how much of it is it just up to Cam to evolve and work at it, understand it?
I think
and
it's
just
a little
get
bit,
better.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think they're, you know, obviously Cam has to put in the work in the offseason. That's why I said, people, when Cam, I want to see Cam after his full offseason of just ball, nothing else. No comparing for the combine, no interviews, no traveling, doing all this, going to different. I want to see Cam after he has a full offseason of dedication. Then the clock for me starts with him. New coaching staff, a full offseason to dedicate himself to his craft. And let's see then, is he working on those things? I think some of those things, you know, that we have talked about in the past, he either has gotten a little bit better or he's still working on them. And the offseason is going to give him an opportunity to really hone in on them. So number one is up to Cam. But then the coaches are there to help him identify some things and really look at some things that within their scheme helps him.
Dustin in Hopkinsville says, when you say game manager, what do you mean? Not the number one talent, not a quarterback like Caleb Williams, not a Jaden Daniels. We call Tannehill a game manager. He couldn't throw over 170 yards in like seven playoff games. He threw over 200 yards in one playoff game while with us. Okay.
But, you know, Tannehill is a different category, right? He was a trade acquisition midway through his career,
yeah,
and a great pickup, mm-hmm, who overachieved. And to his credit, I mean, he's selling him short. He's looking at only the playoff games. There were some regular seasons where he really did win games for them. He played very, very well. So I don't think it's a fair comparison, mm-hmm, to
and he was 7 years in, 8 years in at that point.
Yes, he had a lot of games under his belt. So I think it's so game manager does have a wide array, mm-hmm, of definitions, and I do think it's like a backhanded compliment, but I think what you're looking for is game manager, but with the ability, mm-hmm, to make the key plays, the big plays at the key times. I think of guys like Flacco, mm-hmm, Jalen Hurts, Right now, Bo Nix looks like he could be that kind of guy. The guy who's capable. Mm-hmm. He's not going to dominate every week, but he's going to be solid. He's going to manage the game. And he has the ability in that special moment to make the right play.
Phil says, breaking, ESPN reports Derek Mason says Cam Ward is guaranteed to be the next Patrick Mahomes. You got to be careful.
Oh, my God. Can I say this? I'm at age right now. I don't give a damn. I really don't listen, if you want to take my words out of context, please go ahead.
I'm actually sort of glad. And look, I'm not happy that Patrick Mahomes suffered a torn ACL and needed surgery. That's terrible. But part of me is kind of glad that he is not going to be playing in this game on Sunday, because if he did, we would be getting a lot of, people said Cam Ward was going to be like Patrick Mahomes. I saw Patrick Mahomes out there against Cam Ward. They didn't look anything alike.
But I think what people are missing, like, go, because, you know, whether it was Lewis Riddick or some of these other guys, they never said, and I'm going to repeat this, they never said he was going to be Patrick Mahomes. They said he had some traits of a Patrick Mahomes. How can you take he has some traits to him being, oh, they said he was going to be Patrick Mahomes? No. I don't think everybody even came close to saying he was going to be Patrick Mahomes. They said when they looked at him, he had some traits of a Patrick Mahomes. How he throws the football, you know, the scramble, you know, getting outside the pocket, buying time, those things. Not that he's going to be Patrick Mahomes, but you can have
traits.
But
when you're the first pick in the draft, that's where the mind goes.
I get it. Skyler quickly mentions another number one overall pick. Jared Goff is the perfect example of a game manager. Look at all of Goff's weapons. They need to build around Cam Ward with talent.
The Rams felt so much about Jared Goff that they traded him away. And they knew he was a good quarterback. But in their mind, what did they say? We just need a little more.
Yeah. I think to his credit, he continues to improve.
Exactly.
Game manager, I think we're giving sort of a progressive view of a game manager, right? Mm-hmm. The ideal, if you can't be the superstar guy, which only five teams in a given year have, then you want the high end of the game manager, right? There's game managers that you could use that in here's a backup quarterback. Like, remember back in the day, an older Neil O'Donnell. Mm-hmm. Great game manager. He can win you a couple of games while Steve McNair is out. That used to be game manager. You're just good enough to get by. But we're talking about, like, your starting quarterback game manager. There's a difference between okay, average, and, yeah, he's a game manager, but he's capable of elevating you at a given time, in a given moment, and winning big games.
615-737-1025. We will bring Trevor Maddich into this conversation. I'm curious to hear what Trevor has to say about this conversation. We will also discuss the results of the Heisman Trophy voting with Trevor Maddich. 615-737-1025. We are presented by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get a free estimate now at baxhomeworks.com. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 1025. The game, a reminder. Directly after our next guest, you can guess on our trivia question to win Music City Bowl tickets. But we'll get to that in just a moment. Let's welcome in our friend Trevor Maddich on our phone line. He is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. So, Trevor, we have been discussing so far in this program, we are looking at some of the top teams in the NFL this season. Specifically, the Denver Broncos, the New England Patriots, the Chicago Bears. You can even throw the Jacksonville Jaguars in there as well. And a common denominator for all of those teams is the fact that they have recently made coaching changes that have apparently worked so well that the Bears and the Patriots, for example, who were two of the worst teams in the NFL last season, are suddenly competing for the top seeds in their respective conferences. So let me ask you the question we've been debating. Is a Titans turnaround as simple as hiring the right coach?
It is as simple as hiring the right coach combined with the front office to bring in the right players. And so it is as simple as the right people, but I would say people plural. And so, you know, when you look at how the Patriots did it, I mean, they drafted Drake May, high quarterback. and his QBR last year was about 55 or so. Well, that's gone up about 16 points this year. And when you look at how they've done it, one way is that with Mike Vrabel, their new coach, their defense is much better this year than it was last year. But they also brought in their leading receiver, Stephon Diggs, wasn't with the team last year. He came in for 2025, and Travion Henderson is their leading rusher for the Patriots, and he was drafted in the second round in 2025. And so it's a matter, in the case of the Patriots with Vrabel, of improving the defense and bringing in that running back, bringing in that receiver to support the highly drafted quarterback in his second year. And really in Chicago, it's kind of similar. I mean, very quietly this year, Chicago is second in the NFL in rushing. And DeAndre Swift, their leading rusher, came in last year to support their draft choice, Caleb Williams, at quarterback. And they also drafted Rome Odunze last year, a wide receiver, and he's their leading receiver. And so they improved in key core areas, both the Bears and the Patriots, but they also supported their young quarterback so that in the second year, that young quarterback had playmakers around him. And I think that is the formula that the Titans will have to follow. And so, you know, bringing in the right coach is important. Clearly, Ben Johnson for the Bears was the offensive coordinator last year and last several years for the Detroit Lions, one of the best offenses in the league. But it's the opposite. The Patriots didn't bring in an offensive-minded head coach to help their quarterback, Drake May. They brought in a defensive-minded head coach in Mike Vrabel. So the style is less important than the guy, and how that guy insists that the support come in around that quarterback in terms of playmakers. And right now for the Titans, Tony Pollard, I think, is one of the most underappreciated running backs in the NFL. He's really come on the last couple of games because they've given him the ball the last couple of games. But the receiving core for Tennessee is not nearly what the Bears and the Patriots have surrounded their young quarterbacks with. And that really is the next step for developing Cam Ward.
Trevor, what do you make of the label game manager for a quarterback? Willie used the correct word, I think, to describe, or correct phrase to describe what a lot of people think of when they hear the word or phrase game manager, a backhanded compliment. But we were talking about Bo Nix, and Bo Nix has a reputation, I would say, early in his NFL career of being a quote-unquote game manager, albeit a high-level one. So we all want the elite quarterback, right? We are all hoping that Cam Ward turns into that elite quarterback. But what if Cam Ward's ceiling is a high-level game manager? What would the Titans make of that? What should fans make of that?
I think that would be great. I mean, I think that would be incredible. I mean, if you're one of those playmakers at quarterback, outstanding, good for you. There's very few of those guys in the world. I mean, right now you're looking at guys like Patrick Mahomes when he's healthy, a healthy Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen in Buffalo. There's very few guys that can rise to that level of being actual consistent playmaking quarterbacks at the highest level. But when you look at teams that have won the Super Bowl, you look at the last 10 years, three Super Bowls were won by Tom Brady, three of them by Patrick Mahomes. Well, I think you can make the case that Mahomes is a playmaker, although he's more of a game manager than people give him credit for. At least he does it at a high level. Brady, I don't think you can make the case that he is a playmaker so much that he is a game manager, and the plays that he made were made because he was able to understand with great intimacy what the defense was trying to do and then take advantage of the weaknesses in that defense. And that means know what the tendencies are so that pre-snap he can look at the situation down and distance and all the rest, his personnel group. He sees how the defense is arrayed before the snap. And then after the snap, he sees them transition from the disguise into what their real coverage and real blitz is going to be. And then he knows right away where to go with the ball. Well, that's game managing. That's attacking the defense where the defense is weakest. Instead of being a big playmaker where you're so awesome physically that you're going to defeat the defense no matter what they do, right? Now, having said that, any quarterback will need to make plays in situations, right, where it's third and seven and you have to make that throw and you just have to get it completed, right? Or you have to take off a run and get it done. But overall, if Cam Ward becomes an outstanding game manager, the Titans can win the Super Bowl with that if they surround him with enough players to distribute the ball to that can then be the actual playmakers, the ones that actually go out and become the superstars. If he distributes and distributes correctly and well and consistently and protects the ball, then the Titans can go as high as the other skilled people can take them.
We'll talk with Trevor Maddich, ESPN analyst. Now, Trevor, over the last 2 weeks, the Titans' run game, you mentioned them being able to run the football, but the Titans' run game has been a boost for them. What are you seeing in that offensive line that is causing this? Because last week it was Seattle, and they got a really good defense. This past week it was San Francisco. Not as good defensive front as Seattle, but the Titans were still able to run the ball effectively.
Yeah, they were. I mean, you look at those last two games. Those were the only two games of the season that Tony Pollard, the Titans running back, went over 100 yards on the ground. I mean, it was 161 at Cleveland in freezing weather, and I thought that was a phenomenal performance. And then San Francisco, he only ran it 14 times, but he was over 100 yards, and he averaged 7.5 yards per carry against San Francisco. And so I think the big difference is that they just decided to commit to it, really. I think that was the difference. This offensive line gets a lot of grief. The part of the problem, though, is that it makes it harder for them to look good when they fall behind so fast that they have to go into throw the ball down the field mode so early that teams just pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. If the offense were more balanced over the course of the season, if the defense were able to slow down opponents' offenses early in games so that the game stayed closer for longer, I think this offensive line would look better than it kind of has over the course of the season. It's not perfect, but I think going forward, you've got a fantastic nucleus on the offensive line. I mean, you've got an 11th pick in the draft at left guard in Peter Skoronski, who now is playing like one of the best guards in the NFL. I think that the 7th pick, I think he was, J.C. Latham at right tackle now. I think that a couple of years under his belt at right tackle, which is where he should have been all along, he will end up being one of the best tackles in the NFL. You've got one of the best young centers in Cushenberry, you know, as long as he's healthy and he's able to come back fully healthy. You've got a nucleus of an offensive line that should be performing much better than it looks like because of the overall ineptitude of the Titans offense in being able to sustain drives and score touchdowns. I mean, I think only the Raiders have fewer touchdowns scored than the Titans this year. So, you know, they're not able to score, and that makes the offensive line look bad for a variety of reasons. But overall, I think that they're in pretty good shape, and we saw what they were able to do the last 2 weeks where they won a one-score game against Cleveland by committing to the run, and they lost a one-score game, or not a one-score game, a two-score game at San Francisco, but still ran the ball better than they had in most games on the season. And I think committing to it is one of the big things. I think it shows us that this offensive line and this running game in general actually has a lot more potential than we've seen most games this year.
I meant to say Cleveland and not Seattle, so I'm sorry about that, Trevor.
Yeah, that was the one-score game. That's why I looked at that, yeah.
We're talking to Trevor Maddich. Trevor, of course, covers college football for ESPN. We love getting his perspective on the Titans as well. Trevor, were you surprised at the margin in which Fernando Mendoza won the Heisman?
I was, because I thought that there were three guys of the four finalists that were worthy of winning it. I thought Jeremiah Love of Notre Dame was also worthy of winning the Heisman. And I thought it would be a lot closer between one and two, certainly. But, you know, Mendoza, I think, had two things going for him. One is that he had that massive late drive against Penn State to win the game. I mean, for those who, you know, just to remind, they were down Indiana to Penn State by 4 points, 24-20, with less than 2 minutes to go. So Indiana gets the ball on their own 20-yard line, and first play is a sack. So now they're on their own 13 with less than 2 minutes to go, and Mendoza rips off 9 straight throws and finishes with a touchdown to Omar Cooper in the back of the end zone, which was one of the prettiest throws and catches we'll see all season long, while two defenders were about to hit Mendoza in the face as he drifted backwards, throwing off his back foot, that pinpoint precise throw. It was amazing. And that was one of the things that he had that Diego Pavia, the Vanderbilt quarterback, didn't have necessarily from a standpoint of a highlight. And then the other one, I think, was the Big Ten championship game. This year, the Heisman voters were not allowed to submit their vote until after the championship game. And so they saw on the very first play of the game, Ohio State smash Mendoza. I mean, smash him as he rolled out to the right. And he completed a pass for 9 yards, but he was on the ground on his face after the first play of the game. He got back up and he led his team to a victory over the defending national champs in the Big Ten championship game. And I think those two things were emotional connections of the voter to Mendoza. If I had a vote, and I don't, but if I did, I would have voted for Pavia. Even though he didn't have the splash moments that Mendoza did, I thought what he did overall was more outstanding than what Mendoza did. But Mendoza did have a season that was worthy of the Heisman. I can't say that they got it wrong.
Trevor, you saw Diego's response, right? He knew he made a mistake. Now he's trying to go back and say, I messed up. What advice would you give him as he tries to move forward in his career?
Yeah, well, that mistake, he tweeted out, I guess, an expletive in reference to the Heisman voters.
F all the voters, is what he said.
Yeah, that's what he said, yeah. And it was interesting. I saw Cam Newton, who's a Heisman voter, right? And Heisman winner from Auburn. He was on First Take with Stephen A., and he said, hey, Diego, I'm one of those Heisman voters that you just said F to, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that offended a lot of people. I think the first thing I would say is it takes years to develop a reputation, a good one, and just a moment to trash it, to destroy it. I would be slow to define Diego Pavia by the appearance of that tweet. It was horrific. It was bad. It was selfish. It was dumb in every way. But I don't want to say, therefore, this is the nature of Diego Pavia, because I don't know that. You know, to me, it seemed like he was a competitor. He saw this as a competition, like almost he was in a wrestling match with Mendoza. And right there in the ceremony, when they were about to announce it, he literally was about to pin Mendoza, he thought. And then, bam, there was a reversal, and he got pinned, and he jumped up with that kind of an emotion. And it was after that that he sent the tweet. Okay, I get that part. But the thing is, the negative things that you do will live far longer than the positive ones. And if I were to give him advice, I would just say that it's a whole lot better to take a breath and try to not do something that you'll have to apologize for to begin with, because it's much easier to avoid a problem, any problem, than it is to commit the problem and then have to fix it. And right now, his reputation has taken a massive hit, and it'll take a long time to earn it back.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us every Tuesday, and he is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, as always, thank you for the insight. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, guys.
615-737-1025, okay? If you want Music City Bowl tickets, now is the time. And we are going to do it a little bit differently today. Instead of just being the first caller, I need you to be the first caller with the correct answer to this question. The Tennessee Volunteers, who are playing in the Music City Bowl, are 1-2 all-time at the event. Their lone win came against Nebraska, 38-24 in 2016. Who was named the MVP of that game? Be the first person with the correct answer to David Janes at 615-737-1025, and you will win a pair of tickets to the Music City Bowl. Again, the question. Who was the MVP of the 2016 Music City Bowl, which Tennessee won against Nebraska? 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. I think David Janes is wrapping up with our Music City Bowl ticket winner. By the way, the correct answer was Josh Dobbs. Josh Dobbs was the MVP of the 2016 Music City Bowl.
Rocket scientist.
What is he called? The Pastronaut?
Yeah, something above my head.
Yes. Former Tennessee Titans.
Right.
Educational-wise.
Former Tennessee Titans starting quarterback, Josh
Dobbs.
Yes,
he was.
But yes, Josh Dobbs was the MVP of the 2016 Music City Bowl. So congratulations to the winner. We have three more pairs of tickets to give away this week. We'll do it tomorrow. We'll do it Thursday. And we'll do it Friday. So if you're looking for a last-minute Christmas gift, be listening from 3 to 6 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Music City Bowl later this month when the Volunteers face off against Illinois. Barry Trotz, Predators GM, will join us at the top of the hour. I'm surprised we didn't mention this off the top of the show, but I suppose welcome to new Predators minority owner, Nick Saban.
Yeah.
Yes, that Nick Saban. That Nick Saban has purchased a minority stake in the Nashville Predators. We will ask Barry Trotz about this. We do happen to have someone on the show who played for Nick Saban. So Derek will be asking Barry Trotz and maybe warning Barry Trotz about some of Nick Saban's.
Exactly. Have you seen the commercials?
if he makes a bad joke, go to Miss Terry and she'll handle him.
Yes.
I am really excited about this and curious on how it's going to work. He's clearly got a lot of respect for Bill Haslam, who is, you know, moving slowly to the forefront of the ownership group. And that's a big reason why Nick Saban is in this. But, like, can we not envision him kind of up in the booth with his arms crossed like a Wayne Gretzky kind of looking over? Like, I mean, just having somebody like that in your organization, that is really intriguing.
The ites per 60 are going to be through the roof now that Nick Saban is a member of the ownership group of the Nashville Predators. We'll talk about that and other things with
Barry
Trotz.
Does that mean every player get a Mercedes?
Well, he does own the Mercedes dealership down the street.
Hey. They'll get cut a good deal.
He's got a couple of dealerships here.
Do we get a flagship station discount?
Exactly. Do we get a discount?
I would hope so.
These are the questions. These are the questions. Not sure Barry Trotz will have all these answers at 5, but I am curious just from like coach-to-coach perspective.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Barry Trotz's viewpoint of like when you bring a guy like that in. It's really exciting.
And I've always found it interesting when coaches in other sports develop relationships. We know that Clark Lee and Andrew Burnett, for example, have a relationship. There are countless examples throughout sports of coaches from different sports having relationships. So I am curious about it from that aspect because although hockey and football are incredibly different, the tenets of coaching sports are largely the same. So that'll be interesting to see, but we'll talk about that with Barry Trotz at the top of the hour. Willie, we do want to give you an opportunity to discuss Diego Pavia's reaction to losing the Heisman Trophy. We talked about this after you left the program yesterday. You asked Trevor Maddich about his thoughts on it. We want your thoughts on it.
Well, I wish I was around to hear what Derek said because I didn't get a chance to hear that, but I think he and I will see this the same way. I always think of Herm Edwards, who I thought is one of the greatest, and he's, speaking of Nick Saban, an incredible amount of respect for Herm Edwards. He had Herm Edwards come speak to his Alabama teams. Because Herm, who joined our show weekly for about 2 years here on 102.5 The Game, for people that don't go that far back, so we got to know Herm pretty well. But Herm is the best I've ever seen at putting some of life's greatest lessons into very direct, funny sayings that will always hit your head. And one of them is what? Don't press send.
Mm-hmm.
Don't press send.
Advice we can all use.
But once it's out there, no take backs. And that is the lesson Diego is learning the hard way. I think his greatest strength might be his greatest weakness as well. And I think that guy is going to be very successful in life. And he's going to have a lot of people looking out for him. But he's still young. He's going to be moving into his next phase of life. He's going to take his crack at professional football on some level for as long as it might be. Maybe he'll be the underdog that finds his way to success in pro football. But for success in life, I think this is something he's going to have to learn about himself, right, as he goes forward. How do you channel it, all these great things that he's done, and not have his greatest strength be his downfall, right? And I think
he'll do dumb that hurt the team.
Right. I think he's going to get through this. Mm-hmm. He's going to pay a price for it, right? And so I think there are people he can talk to that will help him. He's got a great circle of support at Vanderbilt that I think have helped bring him along this far and channel it in the right direction. But this is one that, unfortunately, in 10 years, a lot of people will look back and say, oh, yeah, remember Diego Pavia? He finished second. And what did he do after? Mm-hmm. And like he'll be remembered for that, and it will cloud all of the amazing things that he's done. Probably not for me, because I watched him every week, but for the people that don't know him as well, are not as familiar with him, he's going to get a label.
I did read a column in USA Today making the case for Diego Pavia to become a professional wrestler. I'm not kidding. That was the angle of the column. Because, one, he has a wrestling background. Mm-hmm. Two, he can clearly cut a promo. And three, WWE has a program where collegiate athletes can come in and learn the ropes for, you know, no pun intended. But I digress. I hear what you're saying. Here's what I said yesterday, Willie, and then we'll get Derek's thoughts before we get to Barry Trotz. This is who Diego Pavia has been since we were introduced to Diego Pavia. He shouldn't have done what he did. But the people who liked Diego Pavia before that are still going to like Diego Pavia because that's baked into the experience of liking Diego Pavia. He's going to say things that piss people off, and he is unapologetic about it, except for this instance when he did apologize. But I thought there was a lot of pearl clutching over the weekend about, oh, Diego Pavia, can you believe what he said? What a terrible influence. But I wish he hadn't done it. Mm-hmm. But it's not out of character for him.
I approached it, Willie, and I told Adam and the listeners, I approached it from a parent standpoint because I love the mentality on the field. I will take that 100 times out of 100. The mentality that he has, the brassness, the you can't beat me, that whole attitude that you need to be that guy, he has it, and it generates throughout the team, and it helps the team. So I love that about him. But I came at it as a parent, like, there comes a point where, yes, the name on the front of your jersey means a lot, the institution, I get it, the team more importantly than the institution, but the name on the back of your jersey means even more. So as a parent, don't do anything that's going to sully that name on the back of your jersey. I understand things happen in the heat of the moment. I get it. You got to learn how to not say the things that you're thinking out loud sometimes. I'm not saying that, hey, he was upset he didn't win. I probably would have been upset too.
And he had a right to be upset.
But you have to channel that in a different way because Trevor said it right. Like, you built this persona that you built. It's you. And people love it. Now, there's some people that don't. Okay. But I'm talking about on the football field. You built all this goodwill with a lot of people. And I'm not saying that this situation is going to hurt you when it comes to those people. But there are a lot of people, mainly GMs out there, that are looking at that and saying, I'm taking them off my board right now.
I hope it doesn't get to that.
But that's what happens.
Some GMs might look at it and say, you know, I kind of like that a little bit, but to do it, right? It's like you talked about with Notre Dame. It probably felt really good for him to send that tweet. Yeah! Why did you leave me off the ballot? You know, but as soon as he sent it, I'm sure, and started to see, he probably wishes he could have had another minute there to say, got to keep that.
Yeah, got to keep it with you.
So we'll see where it goes from here. But you learn. You live and you learn. Mm-hmm.
615-737-1025. Predators GM Barry Trotz will join us coming up next. The Predators are on a roll, having won 7 of their past 10 games. Nick Saban, now a member of the ownership group. We'll talk about all of that with Barry Trotz coming up next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.